building green homes, a new movement, yes, but also in some ways, a Yankee tradition. The green building movement has changed the way homes around the world are being built. The U.S. Green Building Council says that more than 80% of new homes in the U.S. now have some sustainable features, and an ever-increasing number are built almost completely to environmentally friendly LEED standards. The movement has taken hold here in Maine with new developments focusing on energy-efficient, non-toxic, carefully sited green homes. But many of the elements of green building aren't new. They have roots in common-sense, old-fashioned building practices. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about the concept of green home building, both for people looking to build a new home and those hoping to do some work on their older home. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The idea of green building is hardly new to Maine. Some of our home construction traditions have always incorporated methods that are good for the environment. But today, sustainable homes are in demand as more homeowners embrace eco-conscious living. We're going to learn more about what goes into green building and sustainable design in today's program. Joining me in our studio, Gaius Hennin. He is president of the Shelter Institute, which offers building services and tools, as well as classes in green techniques. Bob Muller is the developer of Douglas Ridge, a new housing development in Brunswick, and owner of Landicity, specializing in building green homes. And Stephen Constantino is the owner of Performance Building Supply and founding member of Maine's chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how to make your home more sustainable? Are you thinking of building a green home? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start this hour by asking each of you how you got into this. And I'm going to start with you, Steve. I understand you built a couple homes for yourself before you opened this company.
Yes, actually, I got interested in high-performance building in the early 80s. From a home that my in-laws built, actually, that was passive solar, very high performance. And I've been interested ever since. I built a couple, designed and built a couple of houses with my wife that were both passive solar design with high performance features to them. And I'm also very interested in creating healthier homes with better air quality.
So when you built these homes for yourself, did you have trouble finding the materials you needed? Is that why you decided to become the company in Maine to go to for builders?
Yes, that's when I started this Performance Building Supply, basically because you couldn't find what you really wanted to work with. A lot of building materials have a lot of junky materials in them, so we were looking to get something that worked better, that was cleaner, created better indoor air quality.
All right. Well, Gaius, you were kind of born into this, weren't you?
Sure was, yeah.
Tell us your story.
So my parents started the Shelter Institute in 1974 during the first oil crisis. And with that in mind, the school that they started really focused on energy efficiency, lowering your heating bills, getting away from oil dependence. And my whole life I was exposed to building and energy-efficient building techniques. I remember sitting in the back of the classroom when my parents were teaching, and that's just been a part of my growing up.
1974, so that was back when this was considered kind of hippie, kind of fringe. It's not anymore, is it?
Yeah, definitely true. I'm always asked, were your parents hippies? but no, I think it's much more mainstream now. I think that we've all come to realize that it's really an important part of building and our built heritage here.
Okay. Your turn, Bob. How'd you get into this?
Well, I'm an engineer. I'm nerdy anyway, and used to rehab houses right. and live in the mess. And we decided to build our own back in 91. And I had attended the Shelter Institute to bring a practical side as opposed to a nerdy engineer side. And we used winter panels. We had a hard time finding low VOC.
Okay, so what's a winter panel, low VOC?
Low VOC is volatile organic compounds, you know, like the old paint used to smell. But the winter panel was basically a Oreo sandwich. It had stress skin oriented strand board on the outside and foam on the inside. So they're just panels you put. They call them SIP panels now. SIP panels didn't exist back then. Mm. So my house was literally welded together with foam. You put a panel up, you weld it with the foam. Very airtight back in 90. And I put a propane furnace in because there wasn't heat pumps that I liked. I had lived with heat pumps. I hated them. They were noisy. They were loud. So I knew I didn't want a heat pump back then, which is just the opposite of what I do now.
Mm. So. It seems as though everything is changing so quickly.
Very much. The trend used to be, okay, they were 30 to 40% more expensive. That's what people still think. That's old thinking. But the trend is actually down to maybe 2 to 5% to build a good quality airtight. I call it a Yankee green common sense home.
Really? To build a sustainable home, to build an eco-friendly home is about 2 to 5% now more expensive than a traditionally built home.
Yes. A traditionally built new home.
Gotcha.
Inventory is still cheaper than building.
Okay, so I'm going to back up a little bit and Steve, explain to us what is a green home. I suspect it means different things to different people.
Yeah, it's been defined a lot of different ways over time, and you're going to get a lot of different answers on that. My definition would be more around energy performance at the top, so making something that is high efficiency, as well as very durable, because there's a lot of energy that goes into the initial building of any structure. So what they call the embodied energy is huge when you're building something. So you might as well do it so that it lasts a long time without having to be renovated a lot. And you get one shot to build that building envelope to reduce your energy use for the life of the building. So that's probably at the top of the list for me. And then you get into air quality issues and trying to use less toxic materials and trying to have a better air, you know, really having a good air-sealed building, which adds to durability and energy and air quality. Those are the top of the list.
All right. Gaius, you know, we talked about in the introduction to this show that some of these ideas are new ideas because there's new materials and new ways to heat your home. But some of these ideas are really old ideas. You know, the people who settled Maine knew a lot of things that were coming back to, didn't they, about how to, for example, site a home or where to place a chimney, where to place the windows. Why don't you tell me more? You're the expert.
Absolutely. You know, the old adage about the answer to this comes up every day, using the sun, you know, placing your house on the lot so that it takes advantage of the energy from the sun to heat, but also placing on the lot so that the house is naturally cooled by obstructions that are on the lot, minimizing windows on the north side of the building. As Steve talked about, an airtight building shell is super important. And that's something that has become much easier to do today with the materials that are available.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are you working with people who are not only building new construction but also doing renovations to make older homes more energy efficient and more green?
Definitely. Our business is hard to describe in one sentence, but one of the things we do is teach people how to build and renovate and just live in their homes. And the other thing we do is build timber frames. So, yeah, we see both sides of that for sure.
Okay. Well, tell us about your development, Bob. What is Douglas Ridge?
Douglas Ridge Estates. First of all, it's named after the Douglas family that lived out there late 1700s, 1800s, 250-acre farm that they supplied food for Shiloh. Shiloh was a big culture, religious, up to 15,000 way back. Shiloh's still there in the temple, but all the rest of the development. So the farms around there supported that community. And I had a talk to Rose Douglas when I bought the property back in, I don't know, 85 to release a legal dower. She was 92 years old, so she told me all about Douglas. So that's why it's called Douglas Ridge. One of the roads is Rose mm-hmm. Douglas. But it's a high we're trying to exclusively do high performance. It's not new. There's been four other communities. There was Brackett Estates that tried and failed. Village Run in Yarmouth tried and failed. Kelsey Brook, on the other hand, I think it's 14 lots, tried and it succeeded, but their time frame was a lot longer, and the developer had the constitution to hang in there.
Where's Kelsey Brook?
Kelsey Brook is in Freeport.
Freeport, okay. Yep. Yeah, I've been there.
Closer to the Brunswick side, and they're all high-performance homes.
So what can you learn from the developments that did not succeed? What can you do differently to make sure this succeeds?
The very most important thing you can do is, one, make sure you have a realtor that knows high performance. Most of them do not. What does that mean? I would like to add my definition of high performance, because mine's more of I consider it a practical. First of all, it's affordable. First and foremost, it has to be affordable. And then, as Steve and Gaia said, use the common sense of orientation. You don't have to have a high-energy engine inside the house. If you design a house right, and first of all, or most important, it's got to be airtight. I made my first house airtight, but I didn't have an air exchanger, even though I ran all the air exchanger ductwork. I opened a window. It worked for me. I wasn't losing a lot of heat. So that's my definition. It's the Yankee simple common sense. It doesn't have to be all these standards and things. It does have to perform. That's the bottom line.
Yep. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I know that green building and green home building is a movement all over the world, not just in the United States. But I'm wondering, are there particular challenges to doing this in Maine as opposed to California?
Yeah,
North Carolina, yeah.
Definitely different in every environment in which you build. You know, there's so many different aspects to green building, like just something as simple as getting materials to the job site. So if you find a product that you are in love with that appears to be very green and meets your definition for low embodied energy and so on, but it's 500 miles away, does it make sense to use that still to get it to the site? And Maine is a little bit like an island. We're sort of up in the corner. And so a lot of building materials that might be readily available in the rest of the country or close to the job site suddenly become difficult to get in Maine.
All right. You know, you mentioned get a good realtor, and I want to read an email. This is from Julia. She says she wants to put a plug in for green real estate brokers who have trained to help homeowners buy, sell, and demonstrate the market value of green and smart home features. We've worked closely with the Maine MLS to identify green features, including buildings earning green certifications, high-performance buildings with air exchangers, heat pumps, and smart tech, solar photovoltaic and battery backup systems, and much more. So already a movement to certify realtors in green practices.
Yeah, I would like to answer the question. What I find the most difficult is educating the consumer, because they have an old perception, and they don't know what high performance means. They think, okay, I'm going to have a new home built. They assume that it's going to be airtight. But we're working to 2009 standards in Maine. I use 2015. So already they're 6-7 years behind the technology if they just have a home built to Maine standards. Maine's one of the lagging states in all this.
When you say standards, what do you mean by that?
That's the
part
code,
of
IRC,
ODEC.
Yeah, and the building standards.
So the standard building code, not the special, like, LEED certified building code.
Correct, correct. Those are well above that. But we're only using 2009 in Maine, and a lot has changed in 6 years.
Is there a movement to change that?
I don't know where it would begin. I think it is from builders talking to each other, but the consumers don't know that. They think a new house is a new house, and it should be good.
So, Steve, what should somebody who wants to build a house or renovate a house ask his or her builder?
Well,
that's a tough one.
Choosing a builder is always a challenge because it is a long-term relationship of sorts. So you really have to pick someone that you can get along with well for quite a while so it ends well. And it's good to know work that they'd done before, actually look at their work and see if they're really going to go in the direction you want.
Okay. We have Gigi on Facebook. She writes, all green living doesn't have to be high tech or expensive. A couple things I've done in my 1,500 square foot passive solar house and cellar is to install a clothesline in the basement. I dry my clothes with the heat from the wood stove and the help of a box fan. I have bungeed up at the top of the clothesline. I take that same box fan in the summer and bungee it to the floor grate where the heat comes up from the wood stove in the winter. Low-tech AC. By closing my curtains and running that fan, that pulls the cool cellar air into the house and I can keep my house pretty cool in the summer. I've never owned a clothes dryer in my life and I'm old enough to join AARP. I encourage folks to think low-tech. These solutions can save money as well as the planet.
I like that idea.
That's great. Agreed.
I concur. Yeah. And that's what I said. You don't need a big energy machine generating your heat pump and all that to still be effective building a... Mm.
That being said, you do need to pay attention to humidity levels in your house. So if you're drying a lot of clothes, you know, for one person is one thing. If you've got a lot, you just have to make sure your humidity doesn't get so high that you start creating mold.
One of the things I like about Gigi's email is I think some of this can be kind of intimidating to folks.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
There's so much to consider out there. I love Gigi's point, and it gets to this idea of you can go crazy building a high-tech, extremely airtight building that will serve you very well. But I also think you need to, at least to some extent, adapt a green living lifestyle. And maybe not exactly what Gigi was getting at, but just this idea of living correctly or well in the house that fits with the time and energy you spent developing a green home.
Mm-hmm. It's often a conversation around a net zero home or high efficiency home. You can't control occupant behavior. So everyone's responsible for their own behavior on whether they make their house actually perform well. If you build it well, that's the first step. But
it's interesting to me that we're several minutes into this conversation and heat pumps have come up, Bob, but solar panels haven't come up. Does your development have solar panels on the home?
The intent is to have all solar panels, but the challenge is and part of the Brackett Estates failure, people in Maine are Yankee frugal. They don't look at the bigger savings, and they don't want to necessarily buy, say, a $20,000 solar system, even though it will pay back in spades. And I compare it this way. Realtor comes in, great countertops. I come in and say, wow, it's got a heat pump. It's got solar. I can buy 5 countertops. I can buy 2 wine coolers custom made. I can buy 20 fire pits for the amount of money, but they're still sometimes stuck on the shiny ball and they don't want to spend the money.
Hmm. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments, I should say more of your comments and questions about green building. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Audubon, a community of people who understand that when Maine's wildlife thrives, Maine thrives. Learn more at maineaudubon.org. And Hurricane Island, integrating science education, applied research, and leadership development, now and for the future. Learn more at hurricaneisland.net.
On the Next Planet Money, is the difference between cheap vodka and top-shelf bottles just a keen marketing campaign?
So would you say that ours is basically Grey Goose?
Yes, I would.
So we basically made Grey Goose.
Wow. And on How I Built This, how Whitney Wolf made dating apps better for women.
It's an hour of economics and innovation on Planet Money.
And How I Built This from NPR.
Join us for Planet Money and How I Built This back-to-back Saturday morning at 11 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. An invasive insect that could kill all of Maine's ash trees and tear up the roots of tribal culture is right at our state's door. Maine is working hard to keep the emerald ash borer at bay, but entomologists say it's only a matter of time before the battle is lost. We have a special Maine Public online report where you can learn more about what's at stake for Maine, including the state's 4 Wabanaki tribes. Visit mainepublic.org, click on the homepage link, Scourge at Maine's Door, or search for Emerald Ash.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about green building. Joining me today, Bob Muller, developer of a new housing development and owner of Landicity. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Very good.
Specializing in building green homes. Steve Constantino is the owner of Performance Building Supply. And Gaius Hennen is president of the Shelter Institute. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Chris Corson. He is founder and technical director of EcoCore. Thanks for joining us, Chris. And I understand EcoCore's work is with passive house construction. That's a term that's already come up a few times in this program. What does that mean? What is a passive house?
Well, thank you for having me, first off. What is a passive house? A passive house is a metrics-based global building energy standard that has a set of criteria that is met, both standards for air tightness, for thermal envelope. The five tenets of passive house are essentially super insulation, high quality triple glazed windows, mechanical ventilation with heat recovery efficiency above 75%, and thermal bridge free construction. And so passive house was a paradigm that was, you know, developed here in the United States in the early 70s and then migrated to Sweden and then Germany. And now has circled back around, you know, 40 years later and is making a comeback as the building energy standard in the United States.
Are you seeing the demand for passive houses growing?
I think it has, yes.
And what is the cost difference between building a passive house and a traditional stick-built house?
I mean, it's impossible to say. I mean, you can build a passive house traditionally, just like you could build any normal house. Our company is prefabricates wall, roof, foundation assemblies for passive homes. I think that the cost delta is really difficult to pinpoint because for all the things that some of the other guests mentioned, I don't know what the countertops look like. I don't know what the level of fit and finish looks like. The idea is that you're investing upfront capital in the components of a home that lasts the longest in a foundation and walls, roofs, and windows. And by doing that, you're reducing the necessity for, you know, complex heating systems while still maintaining a high level of thermal comfort.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much for calling in. Chris Corson, EcoCore's founder and technical director. We're going to move on now to the calls from the public. We've got, let's see here, Anne Marie calling from Camden. Hi, Anne Marie. Go ahead.
Hi. You guys actually just sort of addressed this, but I live in a 200-year-old home in Camden, and it's not exactly energy efficient. And we're sort of exploring the options of building a prefabricated home in the hopes that it would also be quite energy efficient. So I was hoping you could point me in the right direction. It sounds like we've got representation from EcoCore on the phone. What do you guys think about this?
I only build pre-engineered, panelized houses. They're supplied from Unity. I get a naked shell. What that means, it's set up in 4 to 7 days. It is airtight, blower tested, and then we do the fit and finish, the siding, the sheetrock, you know, the traditional trades. We do that in the mid-coast area. I'm also looking at Brightbuilt Homes, which builds a modular high performance. It's two different methods. Each one has its pros and cons. So I highly advocate the new. This isn't the old modular or the old panelized systems because they come all certifiable at many different levels if you want to pay the money to do the certification. I will caution everybody, there's Woofy, there's PHPP, there's HERS, there's HIS. The models themselves are so complex, you have to almost be a PhD to put the right data in on the house, and two people will get different ratings. It's software. So I hesitate to get in all to the geeky stuff, but I certainly would not focus on that. There's one out there called Simple. It was less wrong 25% of the time. All these other ones, passive house included, were 40% wrong.
So what's a consumer to do?
Don't pay attention to all the geeky certification. It doesn't necessarily make a better house. It's like a good housekeeping seal. But if you go pre-built modular, that comes with it. You don't have to worry about it. Our homes will test one or under on a rating for air test, blower test.
I think the at least
that,
yeah for the
that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like simplicity. You know, things get very complicated quickly. So the simpler you can make your design, the better, as well as some of your approaches. Passive House has done a great job at raising the bar on air sealing and making a more airtight shell, and the value of that, which is now proven to be very high as far as energy performance and the rest of it. So, but certifications get complex, and a lot, as you said, a lot of the software can be very confusing, and a lot of the information that people get online can get very confusing. So,
I'm going to address the caller's questions. I'm going to push the timber frame. It's the original modular. We got those out in Woolwich, and as Bob mentioned, the enclosure is a structural insulated panel system, which is inherently very airtight. You end up with sort of a monolithic foam wrapping on the house that makes for a super airtight shell with high R value, eliminating all the thermal bridging just as a natural part of putting the structure together.
Has this movement toward green building created an industry in Maine that create the supplies? For example, Steve, in your store, are you able to stock materials that have been made in Maine for this green building movement, or are we not there yet?
Well, on the more complex products, not so much. You know, we are great at providing wood products in Maine. We sell specialties in my business. So we have triple pane windows and air sealing tapes and membranes. None of those are made in Maine. We have not found a lot of Maine-made products.
Is there an opportunity? I mean, we have a composites lab at the University of Maine. This is an emerging industry.
Yeah, people are working on some things there. I've heard of some interesting insulation materials coming out of that, out of UMaine, as well as cross-laminated timber, which is becoming big on a international scale in some ways, as far as getting away from steel and concrete and going to more timber-structured, bigger buildings that actually are proving to be much more rugged and fire-safe. So.
Anne-Marie, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go to Sean, who's calling from Otisfield. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you today?
Great.
I really appreciate your program. We built our house about 10 years ago, and with the help of, I got trained in timber framing through another outfit called the Fox Maple School of Traditional Building. And they're very much into a low-tech approach and very appropriate technology. And we ended up building a 1,000-square-foot timber-framed straw bale home. And, it was a bit of an experiment, as all kind of owner-built projects are, but we ended up building it for around $80 a square foot, my wife and I and a bunch of friends, and I kind of was hoping to get into timber framing and natural building, but it seems to be really towards an owner builder kind of mindset. So I just wanted to say, proper siting, keep it small, and people can still, it's not rocket science, people can still build their own homes if they keep it within reason. I mean, I have a friend that, does passive houses and build your beautiful home, but it's a little more costly that way. So just the point that I want to make, I'm a solar installer now, and I constantly talk to people, and they ask me about energy efficiency, and I said, if you can just basically keep it down, your costs down, and your efficiency high from the get-go, then you're going to be able to afford a PV system.
All right. Well, Sean, thanks for your call.
He makes a good point. We talked about all these modeling software and stuff. The smaller you make a house, its rating or ranking from an energy point of view, the models might put out a worse number. Some of the models are a lower number as best or a higher number. The bigger you build a house, that ranking can actually go down, but it's still less costly and more effective to build a smaller house. Don't worry about the rating because it's a misnomer in some applications. He made a great point. Keep
Sean,
it simple.
Thanks for your call. Kristen on Facebook writes, "We are Shelter Institute graduates. They taught us valuable skills that helped us build a small, economical home that we mostly heat with a wood stove. We are out of work this year, so the low heating costs have helped us so much. We have great solar gain every day, so we have never needed four cords of wood. I tell all my friends who are thinking of building to take the Shelter Institute course." Gaius, when she talks about solar gain, does that mean she has south-facing windows and our house just heats up in the morning time?
I would say that's true. Also, I just want to say thanks for the shout-out, Kristen. That's great. It is not rocket science. You get 90% of the available solar gain from the sun within 15 degrees to either side of due south. So you don't have to get super complex about siting the building to take advantage of the sun. It's relatively easy to do and should be done.
All right. We'll go to Wendy, who's calling from Carabasset Valley. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Good.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I have been a real estate agent and property manager for 32 years, and I have a strong background in building biology and ecology. And as real estate agents, in the interest of public health, we're required to test for lead and to also test for radon, which is something that has been spoken about for years. It's a carcinogen, and it's invisible, and you can't smell it and all those things. My concern with new construction in an upcoming houses is with protection from the environment in the way of radiation from our wireless networks, both the inside of the home and the outside of the home, as far as hardwiring and also protecting from the ambient radiation, and wondering if any of you are addressing that.
I'm not, but wireless is one of your lowest voltage radiation. This is Bob, but I'm not addressing it specifically.
Yeah, I know it's been talked about a lot here and there. I don't think there are very many builders who understand anything to do with how to clean that up and what the real issue is and how to address that. So
yeah, I think it's an emerging issue that needs some attention.
All right, thanks, Wendy. We'll go to Chris Briley calling in from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Jennifer. Oh, hey.
I know Chris.
Everyone knows Chris.
Everyone knows Chris.
I know the panel. Hi, guys.
How you doing?
I'm an architect here in Portland with Briber, and we do a lot of passive houses and sustainable net zero houses, et cetera, et cetera. And I love everything you guys have said. I was going to talk about keeping your – when I called in, I was going to talk about keeping your design simple to save – both your cost and your energy efficiency, and then you guys immediately covered that. So instead, I'll pick up on something Bob had said about energy modeling and using Woofy, and he mentioned not getting all burdened down into the geeky side of things. And I'm going to kind of take a counter position in that. As an architect, we're using a lot of, we've got a lot of tools to use, to deliver what our clients want. We can do modular houses, we can do stick-built houses, we can do, anything to achieve those goals. One of the tools that we use is this energy modeling. We use Woofy. The reason I think it's important is that we're able to create some output from our design to let our clients know exactly how much energy, or I should say, estimate how much energy they're going to use and consume. And when they start trying to decide, well, how far do I want to take my windows? Do I want to do triple pane windows? And we could tell them those will save you X amount of dollars, but they'll cost X amount of dollars. And all these questions that clients may have, they start to become answered through science or through estimated science.
Sure. Sure. If only you could look in the crystal ball and tell them what the energy costs are going to be, right?
Exactly. I mean, intuition, like these guys say, intuition will get you about 90% of the way there, but to really drill down on things and get answers to questions, energy models sometimes help, and that's about it.
Absolutely, Chris. I said all that but I have energy models on my house.
Chris, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. An email from Anne: I am planning a sun porch on the south side of my home off the kitchen. The goal is to take advantage of the sun on winter days and have a place to start garden plants in the spring. Is there anyone in Maine who would give advice about windows, floor materials that might be better for absorbing heat from the sun?
I think adding a green space on the south side of a house can be very effective. I always say it's like creating Florida on the south side of your house. So even in the winter, it doesn't get below freezing if you do it right. But there are a lot of variables into doing that right. You really have to make it an exterior space and not part of your conditioned space. So you're building your house to be finished so that sun space is outside of it. Otherwise, it tends to be a pretty big energy loss at night in the wintertime. Mm. So you really need to isolate it, I think.
I think there's a big moisture consideration, too, that they have to take into consideration.
Yeah. It's doable, though.
Yep.
Put a nice mass on the floor so you can absorb a lot of heat during the day.
A nice what on the floor?
Mass. A heavy floor. Brick.
Stone.
You know, and even mass underneath that so that it acts as a heat sink during the day and then can radiate for several hours after the sun has set. So you could have time out in the Florida room after sunset.
There you go, Anne. Good luck to you. Well, guess what? We have to take another break. But before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to be broadcasting live from the Skudik Institute in Acadia National Park. Our topic, birding in Maine. Yep, they're about to migrate. If you're in the area, or some are already, we invite you to attend the program. You can come. It's free. No reservations required. For more information, go to mainecalling.org. If you can't make it, but if a question or comment, go ahead and send that in ahead of time. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Community Foundation, celebrating 35 years of investing in Maine communities. Learn more at mainecf.org.
After Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, riots broke out across the country, including in the Chicago neighborhood where King lived. 50 years later, it's still fighting to recover.
We're trying to show a neighborhood that has persevered despite what happened. I think we're trying to show a resilience.
A visit to North Lawndale this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Stay with us in about 20 minutes after Maine Calling for Ideas from the CBC. Today, Dark Wave, Underwater Languages on the Brink of Extinction. Ideas talks with leading marine biologists about the communication between whales and dolphins and why that's in danger. That's coming up on Ideas from the CBC at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Understanding Green Building. Joining me, Steve Constantino with Performance Building Supply. Gaius Hennen is with the Shelter Institute. And Bob Muller is co-owner of Landicity with the Douglas Ridge Development. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Scott on Facebook writes, the future of green building lies in the hands of not only consumers, but also training future construction professionals. The Sustainable Construction Program at Kennebec Valley Community College wants Maine to build better, higher performing houses. We offer an associate's degree, one-year certificates, and public workshops to revitalize the construction industry by graduating the modern carpenter. We promote innovations in building science and renewable energy, advanced framing techniques, as well as traditional methods such as timber framing that value the use of local natural resources, craftsmanship, and structural integrity. Thanks, Scott, for writing in. We'll go to Christopher from West Gardner. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a passive solar house, and it's about 3,000 square feet. My electric bill is about 400 a year, heat 700, and gas 300. I have naughty glass. It's just a double pane glass. I have double walls that are offset. They're 18 inches thick. I have an R70 in my attic and a 60 in my walls. 77 tons of solar mass, and solar wouldn't pay for me active. My electric bill is so low, I was told that it had to be about $70 or more before it was paid, and my electric bill is
only about 30 to 35. And the primary thing I did for green, aside from saving energy, is I got a tremendous amount of building materials from the Habitat for Humanity Restore store. And that's why I call.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for your call.
He points out one thing. You have the solar. I'm struggling with the same thing. Most of these homes are maybe 90%, 75% efficient. So the more efficient you get with the house, the less you can justify solar if you only have a $30 a month electric bill.
Yeah, that's true. And it always, you know, getting the lowest energy consumption should be the primary goal when you're building. Is how low can we get to that in a practical manner?
Right.
An email from Clara. What can your guests tell me about earth berm building in Maine? Anybody here do earth berm building? Turning to you, Gaius.
We do not. It certainly does exist, and you know, can be a very effective way to build a green home to save money. There, I've seen many homes, especially in the western part of the state, that are bermed by the earth. Earth is about 100 times more conductive than air. So if you decide to do that, you want to make sure that you're well insulated from that good conductor.
Yeah, I've definitely seen quite a few berm homes or people building them, and some of them go terribly wrong and end up with mold and cold. So you really do have to insulate the berm side, as Gaius was saying, because
so is earth berming a fancy way of saying building a house into a hill?
Yeah, I kind of like that they can help disappear in a little bit. We do have a lot of architecture that really stands out. And, you know, blending into the woods, I think, is a kind of a cool thing.
We'll go to Dan calling from Portland. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. Hi, Dan. Dan, are you there? Shoot. Okay, we'll move on. How about Peter in York? Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a great day, Jennifer, down here. We got absolutely clear, no clouds at all, and the solar coming in at about 100 into a one tank from a one panel. I'm calling up because several gentlemen, the gentleman there with you, have mentioned the fact that you have to build it right at the very beginning before you start putting on the frills and whistles, certainly not countertops, but even some solar modules on the roof for electricity can come later. But getting the radiant slab over a minimum of R30 basement floor is one very good way to add mass and the time swing between day and night. There's an addition I did in the early 80s that I put R50 in the walls, R50 under the slab, wider footings, and R70 in the attic. And the addition, I had one quartz heater in it. And I stopped by about 8 years ago to ask them how it was doing, and I asked them how much they use that electric quartz heater. And the man frowned, and then he suddenly brightened up and said, that was the thing we took out so my wife could get another bureau in. So there's no heat in the addition at all. There's only four windows facing south. It's about 800 square feet. And I had the roof pitched 60 for the solar panels and the modules, but neither have been added. And the gentleman is correct that if you build a tut, then it starts to become questionable whether you have justification for adding solar. The only big thing is that solar photovoltaics is probably the way you would go in the long run. And with at least one collector on it for hot water.
Okay. Well, Peter, thank you so much for calling in and a great story. We're going to go to Michelle. She sends an email. Why is there such difficulty finding loans and mortgages for construction of green or off-grid homes? Can you share resources and discuss other possible funding? It's an interesting question because I did a quick news search this morning, and one of the news stories out of England this morning is that Barclays is offering to people who live in England a special mortgage for green homes. Is there something similar in the U.S. or not yet?
I'll tell you my experience. I've interviewed a lot of banks, finding the right one. And there's a really good story on a couple that built a passive house down in York. I believe his Roger is his name, but he kept a blog of building this. He had terrible times with a bank, terrible times with appraisers. Appraisers were not, first of all, there's only maybe five certified really good appraisers in the state of Maine. So they really, even though they're paper certified, they are not practical. So getting a good appraiser, they look backwards. There's no comps in Maine. It's not like Colorado or Arizona, and they can't come to a value of the house that the bank will finance. So the couple comes up and says, well, the bank's only going to give me, let's throw a number out, $300,000, but this house costs me $350 or $375. It's still the big obstacle. And I don't know of any association, maybe Steve and Gaius do, that is a big practical problem today in Maine.
All right. And Mark, I think you have a similar question, don't you? Mark in Portland, go ahead.
Well, I'll change my question. what will it take to upgrade the building code so that energy-efficient buildings are encouraged by our communities?
The 2015 International Residential Code, International Energy Conservation Code, is worlds away from the 2009 version. It has a lot of real common sense things in it, such as mandating the elimination of thermal bridging, mandatory blower door testing for homes, so that you can actually test that the design and the workmanship is creating an airtight building shell. I'm an engineer. I'm not a politician. So as far as what it's going to take to get that implemented, I'm not sure. It's out there. It's actually about to become an outdated code as we adopt the 2018 International Residential Code and Energy Conservation Code.
Get out and vote.
Isn't that a Maine? The state of Maine sets that? Yeah.
Mark, thanks for your call. We have an email from Jeremy. My family is interested in building a passive solar home here in Maine. Can the guests recommend any resources for us to consider and or consult with as we look toward designing our new home?
Talk to Steve.
I was going to recommend Bob and Steve.
Yeah, anyone, we do a lot of consulting with people who are planning to build, and early on as far as helping just with some general direction, as well as deeper into the project, we work with architects and builders to try to come up with the best details and techniques to get the end result.
Chris Briley's good at that, too, working with couples.
Yeah, there's a lot of good architects that way, too.
Yep.
Bill writes, this is an email, with building a tighter envelope, there's a concern with moisture and indoor air quality. Part of the Maine Uniform Building and Energy Code does require whole house ventilation. It's based on the number of air exchanges an hour. The code was established by legislation and was negotiated to apply only to new buildings with municipalities with populations over 4,000. Please ask your guests to address indoor air quality. I don't want to do this in depth because we did an entire Maine Calling program on indoor air quality, and so I know that at 153, it's probably not the best. But you,
ACH 50 is the standard, 50 pascals. What's your air change on a blower test? And he's exactly right. The whole, we talk about air tightness, but it's the flow of air and water through a wall that you're really trying to control, and moisture is part of that. You definitely have to have a watertight seal, and all the new homes generally do.
So build it tight and ventilate it right. That's what we say. So it really makes a difference.
Right. Well, Steve sells the tape. That tape is very critical for keeping moisture out, not just air, but moisture as well.
I was going to say, with the airtight construction that we've been talking about, certainly structural insulated panels, you get a buildup of moisture inside the building from normal residential, human activity, bathing, cooking, breathing. ASHRAE has a standard for residential ventilation. It's the 62.4 standard, 2014, I think is the most recent version. It's got a very simple formula in there that tells you what you need for dilution ventilation. This would be in addition to spot ventilation in the bathrooms and the kitchen. And that's a very important point.
Yep.
We'll go to Corey in Sumner. Corey, we're getting toward the end of the hour, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
I just want to get back to the earth-bermed building that was mentioned earlier. I'm in the process of building an earth-bermed home, and there are a plethora of underground vapor barriers and moisture barriers available. I'd like the expert's opinion on which are the most effective green underground moisture barriers available.
Well, I would say in a berm, if you're pouring concrete to as the retaining part of the berm, to you know, there's several wraps out there, and I'm terrible at remembering the names of all of them, but Stego is one of them I know of, which I believe is a German product, but it's sold pretty widely here. But to get that, you know, fully waterproof that edge, not damp-proof, waterproof, and get enough R value so that you don't have cold concrete on the inside.
All right. Good luck, Corey. An email from Christine. We live in a 100-year-old home in Portland and are not interested in moving. We insulated our attic and basement with spray foam. Most of our windows are double pane. We put triple pane windows in our sunroom. What can we do in renovations to improve energy efficiency? Does it make sense to add insulation to individual rooms when we do other projects?
One of the things that's often overlooked is air migration inside the building. So often, you know, builders or renovators will look hard at the exterior of the envelope. There's this phenomenon called the stack effect, where cold, unconditioned air is drawn in at the base of the building as the inside air is heated and rises up. So if you can prevent air from migrating within the building, you can really help stop the stack effect and slow down heat loss that's taking place there just through air changes.
And how does she do that?
Well, expanding foam is one way that's relatively easy. It's not the best. I should probably defer to Steve for products that are good. But certainly all of your plumbing penetrations that run from the basement to the second or third floor of the house are notorious for leaking.
Yeah. So we say fill the big holes first. So it usually in an existing home, which we should cover more, but is to look at the cap first, your attic, your roof, air seal that, add R value there, and then you go to the basement. And don't worry about the walls so quickly. If you can stop air infiltration at the basement level and you stop the outflow at the top from that stack effect, you're going to make a huge improvement on your house.
Yes.
She's taken the most cost-effective approach. Tighten up the house first.
All right. And we do an annual show on energy efficiency for your home on Maine Calling, but not this time of year. We're thinking spring now. Thank you all for being here today. Gaius Hennin, president of the Shelter Institute. Bob Muller, the developer of Douglas Ridge, a new green development in Brunswick, and Steve Constantino, owner of Performance Building Supply in Portland and founding member of Maine's chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.